Hello, hello, and welcome back to the Very Far From Weekly. I should really see about changing the name of this thing. I end up making a joke every episode because we get way off schedule. But regardless, we're back, and the Senate is back, and the government's on the verge of shutdown. So, and we have a new speaker. Because our perennial guest, Epsilon the Claire, took off without a word and resigned his seat. So I was glad to get our new speaker and returning guest, Rosa Berry, in for an interview about how the rest of the session will go and how we got here. There's some interesting tidbits in here that I suspect will make a couple people sweat, which is always nice when I record one of these things. But I'll let us get to that. Without further ado, I'm Kevin Fever, and this is Speaker Rosa Berry. Speaker Berry, welcome back to the show.
Thank you. Good to be back.
Glad you could make time for us. First of all, congratulations on your election to the speakership. Is this a promotion you've been angling for a little while now, or did Speaker LeClaire's somewhat sudden resignation sort of spark a shakeup over there that ended up with you on top?
Well, first, thank you for the congratulations. I appreciate it. You know, it's a deep honor and privilege to be considered among the ranks of speakers. In answer to your question, no, this was never something that I thought would ever land to me, of all people, out of, well, anyone, regardless of which party they're in. I think that my predecessor's sudden resignation required that we need to change tracks a little bit.
Okay.
And therefore, that meant someone else. And bluntly, it's, you know, the speakership is a very difficult job, especially with the public pressure that it comes with. And not to say that isn't a bad thing, it's just a very difficult, difficult thing to deal with. And so I think... That's why other people in my caucus and my party were reluctant to wanting to do bluntly.
Okay.
But I volunteered.
So it was less vying for the position and more if we needed to track down somebody willing to put up with it?
Basically.
Interesting. All right. So as you mentioned yesterday, and we're going to dig in a little bit more on a couple things from the press conference, but... you, of course, opened yourself up to some questions, and you got a few that were more related to, like, inner caucus workings than how the House is going to function at large. In addition to Speaker LeClaire's departure, Representatives Freedom, Duchon, and Devin All also departed from the House unexpectedly in recent days. What exactly is going on over there in the GOP House caucus? Should we be expecting any more resignations?
No, I don't think so. I think that this was just a... storm of unfortunate events and bad luck for some of my colleagues and, well, now former colleagues. I don't expect any other resignations after this. Hopefully that edge of the bleeding will just stop.
Okay. Can you take a couple minutes, just kind of free form, on what you're hoping to get done with the rest of the session with the narrowing majority, and given that the budget has kind of been knocked out of the picture as a policy vehicle?
Absolutely. I think one is that the majority, at least as far as I can say, the consultation with Majority Leader Purdy, is the understanding that we need to get things done, first of all. And we have some legislation that will be in the hopper pretty soon that I think even my colleagues on the other side of the aisle might appreciate. We got some defense appropriations to help modernize our military, especially given recent events. I think that's called for it. The second is other legislation that especially focuses more on infrastructure and environmental policy. Some including to my home constituents that I campaigned on. And I think everyone can appreciate some of those policies. So We're just trying to move forward away from, you know, this crisis that's happened and move forward to accomplishing what we promised to do. So that's our expectations.
Can you clarify a bit on what you mentioned there with the defense appropriations? Because as far as I understand, then, of course, I'm always balancing my roles between working here in the press and then whatever government positions I happen to be in at the time. But the budget that I just voted on didn't have any changes from the status quo defense funding. So is there another bill in the works that would actually, like, supersede the budget that we agreed on? Or what's the plan there?
No, it wouldn't supersede. It's more of using the discretionary money that's still left and then working that towards putting it towards the Defense Department. There'll be nothing related, you know, adding on to what wasn't agreed to. We'll keep our deal.
That's good to hear. I wanted to ask a couple follow-ups from the press conference on Friday, if that's all right. We discussed at the time that the House does, in fact, have secure lines for, like, phone and video communication, right?
Yes. The House, of course, just like the Senate chamber, I would imagine, have secure lines. And I know that representatives and senators are free to use them, as far as I'm aware of, but especially the leadership need them.
Perfect. Would, like, committee chairman count as leadership there?
I mean, I think any reasonable person would imagine that chairs are also able to access these.
Okay, I would imagine so, but just wanted to clarify because I've been out of the House for a good minute now. Wasn't totally sure on the procedures over there, but glad to have that cleared up that it's accessible. So at the time yesterday, I asked why the WMBEO chair, Pete Buttigieg, would have subpoenaed Senator Brumman during the Senate crisis, specifically in person. And he cited security as the reason for needing to have him in person there, when, as you say, there was a secure remote option available to him. You directed me to Mr. Buttigieg and committed to following up with him if he didn't get back to me within 24 hours. And we're recording this now at, I guess we started about 2 o'clock on Saturday, getting my ducks out of a row. We're past the 24 hours point now. So can I get another commitment for you just to have a chat with the chairman and report back what that reasoning actually was if the secure line wasn't the issue?
Certainly.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And I'll be sure to follow up with you to make sure we get that out to our viewers. The other question I wanted to follow up on came right as you were closing the conference, so it's kind of understandable that was skipped over. When talking with another reporter, I believe, about whether the LRP taking control in this recent state election in August of every state government marked a shift in the mandate that your trifecta has, you said that no, the voters were just expressing frustrations about particular people and not about the larger agenda of the left. Which people might those voters be expressing frustrations with?
I think, well, everyone could draw their own conclusions. Perhaps they're frustrated at the White House, with Senate leadership, on maybe even both sides of the aisle, but certainly towards the left. And I think especially against my predecessor. You know, my predecessor is a great man, you know, but he also had certain controversies and baggage behind him. And this is often, especially for a speaker, can be very, gives reactionary views for all the voters when things go bad. And so I think that was more so of what was going on.
Okay.
With recent election.
So you don't believe that it was necessarily because of state level issues. It was much more a response to what was going on federally with the trifecta.
I think so.
Okay. And outside of the individuals, I guess maybe another angle at this that people might've been looking at. What do you think? I guess I'm trying to square this a little bit on the fly here with what was said yesterday, because my impression from the press conference at the time was that your position was saying that it wasn't necessarily because of what was happening federally. It was because of frustrations specific to the state level, and you couldn't really tie it to any particular people. So is there anything that would be, I guess, frustrating enough to voters that would cause them to put the LRP into power nationwide on the state level that wouldn't have ties to the national GLP agenda?
I suppose, especially in particular to Jefferson and the North, there were just certain situations that were happening on the state level that insofar, you know, created a ruckus on the state level. And I think that's in part of also why voters lean more favorably to the LRP, though by no means was it a slam dunk in places like Dixie in the North, though I think Jefferson was fairly concrete of pushing out the left, as unfortunate as that is.
Is there a plan?
But I don't think there's...
Sorry, please continue.
I was just saying that there wasn't any certain people, rather just the factors going on at the time.
I see. Well, I guess what the viewers try to piece together what that means with you saying it was because of the White House and the previous speaker about 4 minutes ago. But we'll leave that as is. Well, I guess the last, well, a couple last minute questions here, and then we'll try to go to the studio audience for a couple questions. You spoke on Jefferson being a pretty severe route in terms of right-wing control. The left didn't really run any candidates, and now that you've been placed in that leadership position within the party, what's the plan for Jefferson? Like, the GLP ran one candidate who got blown out by about 60 points. Is there a road to recovery there, or is it just that Jefferson has had enough of left-wing control for a while?
I think as soon as Jefferson voters realize that, you know, if the LRP majority does nothing in Jefferson, you know, that very concrete majority does nothing, and they do not own up to anything, or even if people are incompetent in that legislative chamber, then, of course, there's going to be a negative reaction, and they might swing the other way. And I think part of that strategy on our part, obviously, is trying to call that out and offering an alternative plan. I think there's a lot of burnout going on. I even see it with the other parties too, is that certain people are just exhausted from running almost every single election cycle, and it's obviously affected my party in many ways, unfortunately. But I think part of the strategy is, one, is not just recruiting more people to run, but also trying to mitigate the burnout and get people elected. And I think that strategy will hopefully work in the upcoming midterms and in future elections.
Okay. We have one time here before we let you go for one listener question, and this one comes from a viewer who's pretty comfortably on the left. They want to know, how did the left manage to go from a trifecta to, and I'm quoting here, a trifecta to capitulation in about 4 weeks? Now, I know that you and really no one from the House was part of the negotiations between the LRP Senate and the White House and the GLP senators, but do you have any insight there to, like, internal conversations? I know that there was some frustration from a couple of House members, particularly Natalia, on what seemed to be the deal that came out of those negotiations. So I guess, do you wish that there had been a little more communication with the House, or where do you see how that deal landed, where you go from there?
I think up until my predecessor resigned, you know, these negotiations weren't really taking place. And so, of course, the House was kind of left out as a result, because one, we didn't have, you know, the leadership in place for the House to be represented. The second was, you know, because the House was in such disarray, over my predecessor's resignation, it was just hard, you know, for the House to have input. Though I I do wish in other circumstances that we do, especially moving forward. As for the audience members' questions, I can appreciate their viewpoint as well as some certain colleagues of mine. But it isn't capitulation at all. You know, we do have a trifecta, though. And the Senate is more or less so than the House, obviously. But if we want to do our basic mandate to govern, we have to have the other senators in the LRP be a part of that. And that takes compromise, first of all, but also takes lots of negotiations, as I'm sure you, Mr. Fever, can testify to. But, you know, we don't stop on a dime. It takes a lot. So we did get a lot of stuff out of it, though, and we definitely are able to do what we now have wanted to do for the last few weeks, and that is to be able to govern. And now we're getting a budget passed, and soon it should be hopefully some smooth sailing to there. I guess we'll see.
Yeah, final question for me on the budget. You were the lead and only congressional sponsor of the budget. Over in the Senate, we found an issue that would actually rewrite the entire budget to return to one of Ted's budgets from the previous administration. Are you confident now that that issue's been fixed in the Senate, we've kicked it back to the House, that it's going to be passed in time? Of course, by the time we get this out, and I'm trying to book another interview to round out our time slot here on the show, but we might know one way or the other whether it was passed in time. But what are your feelings right now that we're about 9.5 hours from a shutdown, or 10.5 hours from a shutdown?
I feel very confident that the House will get this through, and especially for the rumors that, you know, it will be passed and on the president's desk before a shutdown. That is my hope. I think that just involves whipping every single House representative to, you know, vote in a timely manner. But
all right. Well, we'll be watching close, and we'll hopefully see. I'm going to try and get this one put out so people can hear your thoughts before that budget deadline comes and goes. But we'll see if it gets done. Speaker Berry, thank you again for your time. I appreciate it.
Certainly.
I want to apologize for the echoing issue that you heard on Speaker Barry's half of the conversation. That's a studio problem that will get resolved now that we're hopefully getting back to putting these things out regularly. Remember to subscribe wherever you listen to the podcast to get the latest episode delivered straight to your feed. The Weekly is a public record podcast.